Hey everybody, Daniel Gregory. Thanks for tuning in to episode 84 of The Perceptive Photographer. A lifetime ago, I was actually an instructor for public speaking. I taught a number of classes at the university, one of which was public speaking and business and professional communications, which was a class which was basically public speaking, but kind of for more of a business setting. One of the things about teaching in there is we had two types of speeches we had students have to give. They had to give an informative speech and they had to give a persuasive speech. One of the things in that process was we had a formula that they followed. If they were given an informative speech, they would start off with an anecdote or a story. They would then tell the audience what they were going to talk about. And that was usually broken down into kind of three key elements. They would then talk about those three elements, inform them, provide some information that the person may or may not have known. They would then summarize that information and then usually end with the conclusion to that story they kind of started off the speech with. The idea was that you could really summarize it, bundle it together, and if you followed that same structure every single time, you'd have an effective, informative presentation. Same thing with a persuasive presentation. We taught there was a certain structure there. Again, you started off with a story or an anecdote. You gave a statement of opinion. You gave the statement of what you thought you wanted to persuade your audience to believe. You then provided supportive information. You would then provide information that disproved any counterargument to the supposition you were making. Eventually, you made a call to action, provided your summary, and the speech was over. The idea, again, was that there was this very specific formula that you could follow over and over again. We actually had a grading scale set up so that there was a certain amount of points awarded for each section. Students would go down the list. You'd check it off. They had to go in a very specific order. And if they did that, the idea was, like I said, they had an effective presentation. We know that that's probably not entirely accurate. That's not actually how arguments are made. That's not how presentations are given. Even when we give formalized presentations, while there is a narrative and a structure, you don't always actually follow the same exact steps. What got me thinking about all of that and kind of remembering that is I was packing up all the books to move to the new studio. And as I was putting those books in there, I really got to thinking about what really makes for a good photo book? What makes for a good photograph? Some of those things we've talked about before on other podcasts, some of the things we may have talked about in blog post. And one of the things I realized is that for photography, there's no real formula for a successful photograph. There are rules of composition. There's rules of thirds. There's the golden mean, the golden ratio. There are elements of composition we might talk about how we structure the frame. There's certain points of view that mean certain things. There's a way we psychologically respond to elements within the frame through the use of leading lines or movement, things like that. We might talk about how color and color theories can be applied. But in the end, there are still photographs that just resonate with us. There are photographic stories that resonate with us. And they matter not because of the structure that's in place, but because of the response we have to the image. And I think one of the things that I realized in that process is that when art is successful, not just photography, but when art is successful, it's a reflection of the condition of who we are as individuals, who we are as a group, and who we are as a collective society, and then who we are as kind of the global society. That there are these universal traits, universal concepts that really can influence and shape the way we think about ourselves, think about how we're a part of that community, and think about how we're a part of the universe. And it's in the understanding of that condition that I think is important. And as I got to thinking about that, I think there's a number of different types of photographs similar to how we had those types of speeches that kind of reflect on the condition of really who we are. I think you can have photographs that are reflections of who we are. They're the mirror. They kind of tell us who we are about ourselves. They might shine a light on some interpersonal, introspective aspect of who we are. I think about like Diane Arbus and some of the mental health issues she suffered and how that showed up in her work. I think about some of the isolation that Cortez felt and how that's translated into some of his work. Or the respect and majesty and grandeur that Ansel Adams felt when he was in nature and how that was actually reflected in his work. So I think there's this reflection of who we are back in the work. I also think photographs can be informative, much like an informative presentation or an informative speech. We can have photographs that are there to just provide some level of information. They're factual, they're more documentary oriented. I think there's photographs that are meant to be persuasive. They're attempting to shift our thinking a certain way. When you think about Lewis Hines and his work with children in factories, when you think about Cindy Sherman and her work in the 70s on the motif of women and how they were portrayed in cinema, things like that, their idea is to shape and mold and influence our thinking. So there's a persuasive element to that. I think there's a beauty element. I think a lot of landscape photography, a lot of portrait photography is really about showing the beauty that exists within the world and the amazing things that are in the world in a way that we won't necessarily stop, look at, and appreciate in the way that they're actually being created. I think there's also photographs for significant moments. There's these moments in time that are significant and the photographs capture those. They relate the importance of that instance, the fragility of that instance, so that we know that in that moment something special happened. I think there's also an emotional connection to the image. There's things that tell us how we emotionally should respond to things, how we emotionally feel to things. There's photographs that bring us to tears. There's photographs that make us laugh. They're able to connect with us on a very visceral level, on a very primal level, that tell us that we are connected to something greater than us, that there's a universalness to these emotions that we express and feel. And I'm sure there's other types of photographs out there, and there's other types of photography out there. But as I was going through and looking at these different books and putting them in there and deciding which books to keep, which books to not keep, which books to give back to friends that I had borrowed, yes, they're coming if I borrowed them from you, what really was interesting was at the core of those books, like I said, was a reflection of the condition of who we were at the time and who I think on some level we wanted to become. And I think as I look at what's kind of going on, particularly in the United States with our current election cycle and some of the kind of languages presented, some of the issues that have come to light, is I think that's one of the things in photography that we have to remember and we have to hold in the forefront, is that we do have a responsibility, I think, to accurately tell the stories in the way we experience the world, in the way we see the world, in the way we respond to the world. And so however you're emotionally charged on whatever issues you're facing, whether it's sexism, racism, the environment, whatever it is, that you somehow have to make sure that your own condition of who you are in the moment is being reflected in the work, somehow translated into the work. And if you're having that feeling, that having the ability as an artist to step out and express that in a way that others potentially can't. So maybe you're a landscape photographer, but you're really struggling with issues of racism or sexism. That might be a chance for you to pivot and create a whole new body of work, to pursue a whole new way of creating your art, to tell that story, to tell your relationship to that story, to add your own experience to that story. Because I think it's in that passion, it's in that feeling, it's in that response, is when we really find out the value of art in society, because it's allowed to say things, it's allowed to push things in a way that we can't otherwise. It's a doorway into a way of creating a universalness between all of us to increase and push that dialogue. And I think it's important that we do that through our work. I think it's important that we are aware of what values we have, of what things are important to us, and we try to translate that into the work. So like I said, if environmentalism is something that's at your forefront and you're really passionate about the environment, you should be out creating work that translates the importance of that to you, that shares that value, so that you can create informative, persuasive, emotional, beautiful images that are a reflection of the condition of who you are. I think in that, we will find that we have a lot more in common than we have not in common. It's one of the things that allows us to bridge conversation. And ultimately, I think that's one of the great things that we can do through our art and through our photography. So we can start to bring people together and start to have conversations in a much, I think, more progressive way, where we're talking about the art, what the art possibly means, what the photograph can mean, what are its shared meanings, what are its dis-shared meanings, and allowing us to really kind of gain insights into what is possible for us when we do take steps forward together. So I would encourage you to go out and find some passion, some meaning in your work. Really try to go back and find out what you can do to make your work really resonate, like I said, into that condition of who you are. If what you need to do is come up with that formula so that you can go out there and feel really grounded and really comfortable. So like that informative speech where you've got these introductory story, these three steps, you're going to summarize it and you're just going to repeat that over and over again. If you have a formula you need to create so that it's easy for you to focus on the content and not the technical side, I think it's important to do that. So what I would really encourage you to do is spend some time this week thinking about really where is it that you are and where is it that you think we need to be, and find a way to translate that into your work. Find other artists who are translating and sharing those stories. Find a way to work with them, share those ideas, share those conversations, and really try to push yourself to be something more than you are. Don't stagnate. Really try to get out there and push the edge of that creativity, push the edge of who you are, and find that condition of who you were meant to be. I hope you have a great week behind the camera and that I've given you a few things to think about. I will see you next time. And don't forget, you can always find us up on iTunes, or you can find us on the web at www.theperceptivephotographer.com. Have a great week.